Welcome to WSG's podcast.
Hello, Lakshmi.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. So today we are going to discuss about children in divorce. This is our part two of our first episode, which was, this is a part two of our previous episode, divorce.
Correct, that's right.
Right, okay. So just so the audience know, we will be covering four topics. One is becoming victims, behavior, confusion, and children in care. Now we'll explain each segment as we get to it later on. So let's just kick off the whole topic about children in divorce, about how they actually become victims of divorce. And how does it actually start for the children? Like the moment they hear the word divorce, or the moment they have they understand that, okay, that my parents are getting divorced, how is it that they become the victims of it? Like, what are the scenarios that they will become victims of divorce?
Okay, so basically what happens is that as a young child, let's just say preteen or even earlier than that, what happens is that when divorce happens, normally kids are not in the know of what's going on around them, what's happening, why is suddenly mommy crying a lot, or why is suddenly daddy's no more home, why is, you know, things becoming very different, why are people asking them about what's happening at home and all that. So that's the first thing that kicks in children in divorce, the confusion. So when confusion happens, what exactly goes on in the mind of a child, it's very hard to say. But what happens is that they will normally be very lost. Don't know what's happening. Yeah, and they're, you know, it's a whole blur mess for them, because they have, since the time they have been born, they've always been part of this family. And suddenly, you know, when things are breaking down around them, especially the younger ones, they don't know what divorce means. Okay, so when that happens, you know, they are really in the loss. They start actually showing changes in their mood as well, because of the confusion. So, a lot of things like that happens. Like, they will get very lost, confused. Emotionally and mentally, number one, that's how it affects the child, I would say. Yeah.
One very, very common thing that happens between children who are in divorce is they become, like as you said previously before we even started recording, you used the phrase tug of war, which actually perfectly describes their role in this entire divorce process.
Okay. I mean, yes, correct. When I said tug of war, when we were speaking earlier, when I was talking about tug of war, what I actually meant was for younger children who don't know what's happening in their relationship before the divorce, the decision of taking divorce happens. So that's when you see a lot of tug of war happen between the mother and the father, on trying to, like I would say, psycho the child to, you know, take their side in the divorce. So that's when the tug of war happens. And it's sad, to be very honest, it's sad, but that's the reality of divorce.
And many times, the child doesn't know why is this even happening. I mean, if you were to ask a child, most of the time, they have their favorite parent, okay?
Correct.
Yeah, they always have a favorite parent. It's just like a favorite toy. I mean, they love each parent, obviously, but they always have a favorite. That's how children are, the younger ones. And getting them to take sides, it's actually kind of sad, because as adults we know that if the child comes to this parent, like the mother, then she has got benefits out of it. Like, she can get maintenance for the child and so on and all that kind of stuff. And she can probably get the house. Probably. Correct. Okay. But this is definitely each to its own case. A lot of cases are complex and there's a lot of things that happen during the time where children are involved. But both spouses I had, as I had mentioned before, off record, they actually know which parent is much, much more capable of looking after the child.
In an adult's point of view, yes.
Yeah.
A parent would know. But then, like, again, we are talking about kids in divorce and it's harder for them. It's really harder for them.
It's harder for them.
Yeah. Correct.
But if given a choice, I think they would, you know, just easily pick, I want to be with this parent, I want to be with that parent. But it's sad that some parents know that they cannot take care of the child and yet they want to pull the child to their side for their own benefits.
Yeah, I think ego plays a part here.
Yeah.
Ego plays a part here.
Like, actively, this parent has not been, you know, actively being involved in the child's life. But for some reason, during a divorce proceeding, the child becomes a very important aspect to them. So that is actually very sad because, I mean, come on. The child clearly knows which parent is, you know, more involved with them and plays with them and talks to them and relates to them and is more of a friend, also a parent, but more of a friend, willing to listen, willing to do things, you know. So children know that. I mean, even as a baby, the baby knows that, okay, this is the caretaker. She's the one who's going to feed me. She's the one who's going to do stuff. Or he's the one who's going to change my diaper. He's the one who's going to, you know, shower me. So they know that who looks after them and who plays with them only, you know. So kids know which parent is more of a functional parent than a parent who's just there and not being actively involved in their life. So being victimized because of this proceeding is very, very unfair to the child. And for parents to actually tell them, like, hey, you need to take my side, I'm the right one, I don't think it's their place to actually say that they are the better parent or anything, you know, because the child already knows who's the better parent.
Correct. I mean, yeah. What you say is true, but the thing is that let's put it in a child's point of view. So what exactly happens is that a child would think, okay, this parent is more fun.
Mm.
This parent is always the one playing with me. This parent is the one always bringing me out. But then again, a child at that point of time don't really see which parent actually holds more responsibility.
Mm.
So there's a fun side and there's a responsible side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So at that point of time, it is always difficult for a child to make that decision. And that's when parents step in. And that's when, sad to say, but the parents use this talk of all kind of things to actually pull the kid to the side. Like, maybe one parent is saying, you know what, you be with me, I know, if you come with me, I will take care of you, you know, we can do things like how we used to do before that, we can go out, we can have fun. Whereas their parent is like, okay, if I take over the child, you know, I'm the one feeding you, I'm the one clothing you, I'm the one, you know, blah blah blah. They use these two things.
Yeah, I think enticing a child takes skills.
Yeah, takes math skills.
Yeah, and one other thing that I wanted to talk about becoming victims is that there are some parents where the child temporarily stays with either one of the parents during the entire process of the divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, and they actually get abused in the process because it can be because the spouse has got no other way of letting off steam and they're so angry and all that kind of stuff, and then they start abusing the child. And they think that it's their right to, and it's okay because it's their child. But it's not exactly going to work in favor to them when it comes to the divorce. But it's sad that they actually get beaten up. Or no, you know, like the parent, the mom or the dad actually like vents their anger on the child.
Yeah. So that really how would I put this? That really, it's really on the parents. It's not really on the child. I mean, yes, the child is going through that. It's really on the parents. It's very difficult for the child as well, because at that point of time, I mean, talking from personal experience, but at that point of time, you don't know what kind of frustration that parent is going through. And then when it results in things being said to you, or, you know, physical abuse and all that, it's just hurtful. It's traumatically stressful for a child, because at that point of time, you don't understand what's happening. One thing that I have personally experienced and also seen a lot in other families is that this word gets thrown a lot, whereby the parent who holds the custody actually verbally attacks a child by saying, "Oh, you're just like the other parent. You're just like that person." Yeah, and you know, it hurts. It really hurts the child.
That's sad. Especially if it's like it's a case of cheating. Like either spouse has cheated, you know, and you don't want to be labeled so young, or like you're just like your mom, or you're just like your dad, he's a cheater, or, you know, that kind of stuff. You don't want to be labeled at such a young age. And children in divorce, the one thing that they lose out is that they lose out on their childhood because of this whole process. If they are supposed to be growing, supposed to be evolving, and supposed to be at their happiest at this time, especially when they're younger children. I'm saying like below primary six. Okay, they are supposed to be going through a good childhood. They tend to compare themselves with other kids in school, right? Like how come like he even like parent meeting session? How come like this child, his parents are coming, and then my family is only my dad? Or I mean, obviously most of the time the one parent is working. But what I'm trying to say is that if not for that situation, the child mentally tends to like compare themselves with other children, and they tend to feel like they're not as gifted, they're not as good, they're not as special, you know, they're not normal.
Yeah.
And they don't have a normal life, and that their life is so complicated, and they start becoming embarrassed about it.
Yeah. Okay, let's not talk about parents teachers meeting. Let's talk about something very, very close, like celebrating Mother's Day or Father's Day. You know, in primary school, and you know, even in childcare and kindergarten, nursery, kindergarten stage, during closer towards this these two so-called holidays. Not really holidays, but these two celebrations, the children will end up doing some art and craft based on these art and craft gifts for their parents, be it Mother's Day or Father's Day. So how do you actually put a child in that situation whereby, okay, so for example, this child's parents is divorced, and then she's staying or he's staying with the mother. And then Father's Day come and everybody's doing their Father's Day card for, you know, their dad. And then this child doesn't have that that ability to actually pass this card to the dad. Or let's just put it in this way. The child's parents pick them up from school and everything, they immediately can go back, or even on the spot when the dad picks them up or their mom picks them up, they could actually give them that artwork that they did for them. What about a child from a divorced family?
I don't know, you pass it to the lawyer? Or you can mail? No, I mean, but in all honesty, if for the fact that the child needs to do that particular activity in school itself and the parents are not there, that itself is like very like confusing for the child. Should I do it? Should I not do it? Like, my dad's not with me. Why am I even doing this in the first place? So all these things come into that very tiny mind. When actually, it doesn't matter. Like, on an adult's point of view, it doesn't matter. It's a card. It's a damn card. Just do it. You just pass the art and craft session and just leave it.
Yeah, correct.
Nobody
let's,
cares.
Let's not talk about card. Let's talk about doing a family portrait then.
Okay, everybody someone is going to get minused out from that portrait, we know that.
Yeah, correct. So imagine if you're in a group of kids, they're sitting down drawing their family portrait and everything. And then one of the child, you know, from a divorced family, he's drawing maybe his mother or his father and himself. And then the kid next to him looks over and says, how come you don't have a mommy or daddy in your photo? This strikes a chord in a child's life. I can tell you, honestly, this strikes a chord. And then that child, even, no matter how young they are, that child will actually start to think, why don't I have that the other parent there? Yeah. And to be honest, I can tell you 60% of these kids, they are actually trained not to think about the other party, the party who does not hold the custody. Yeah, I've even seen a mom who actually threw out a family portrait because the child included the dad in that drawing. Yeah. So in that case, what do you do? If cards fight, we'll just mail it over or, you know, send it to the lawyers or whatever. But then what do you do with things like that?
I think in a place where the parents cannot do anything, where the parents are not present and there is another adult in that space. Okay, in this case, we're talking about a school environment. I think teachers already have the heads up that something is going on in the family. And then they will have to try to be a bit more sensitive. So, and also take into consideration that this one activity can possibly affect the child, can actually be a triggering factor. You get what I'm saying? Because in schools and institutions and stuff like that, I mean, everyone is trained to treat the child normally. Even special needs school, they even have special needs children in normal school. So the whole idea is that to make everyone feel normal and not to discriminate someone. So I think in a place where the parents cannot do anything, such institutions, it's really on them to make the child feel as normal and, you know, take this as easy as possible, you know. So we just got to keep our fingers crossed that the child knows that it's a family portrait. Learn how to differentiate that it's a family portrait. Just do that. But maybe that's actually too much to ask from a child anyway at that age. Like, can you just draw this and just submit the artwork? Like, no. So, is it very difficult, you know? So, I know, like, in our point of view is that we look at it as merely an artwork, but for the child, it's like a triggering factor.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so as much as we have to be sensitive, I think the school also has to be sensitive to know that such an artwork could spark some questions at home later on.
Yeah. It can spark some questions at home later on, or it can spark some questions internally which the child doesn't share and keeps inside.
And that is worse. So,
yeah,
I think it is always important for a child to have someone to speak to, someone to seek comfort, someone to a neutral party, basically. And when I say neutral party, it's people who do not take sides. Even relatives take sides. So, in my opinion, aunties, uncles, grandparents and all these things are not exactly the right people to go and talk to. I mean, if they are people who don't take sides, then it's good.
But if they are, relatives will definitely take sides.
Yeah, relatives will definitely take sides. Or there are some relatives who are really hypocrites because they'll be like, I knew this was not going to work between both of you. Like, I knew it.
Yeah.
And you will be like, oh, so I had to go through a damn divorce for you to actually come and give me your honest opinion? And then they will say like, oh, it's not like if I told you my opinion, you're going to call off the wedding or something, right? No, right?
If you actually look at the wedding pictures closely, those are the relatives who will be dancing happily during your wedding.
Ah, they're just there for the food. Just there for the food. We invited them only for the ampau. And we needed the number of people so that, you know, nobody will ask weird questions. Speaking of that, on a side note, it's the best time to get married because COVID, you know, the number of bags thing.
Yes.
Okay, so aside from that, yeah, so violence, hitting a child and all these things, it can work against the adult, the parent. It can work against the parent because we have schools involved. If the child is already going to school, we have schools involved. There are telltale signs that a child is going through abuse. So a parent is highly likely to get into huge trouble with MSF and all that kind of other things that we don't want to, you know, so many other people will start getting involved and this is going to be messy. So I think every parent should know that you're not going to get away with violence against a child because it's, you already have a divorce on your plate. You don't want to end up messing around with MSF because you are destroying a child's life.
Life. Correct.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that MSF will not take good care of your children, but you're ripping off a normal, cohesive family unit or a happy child. You know?
True.
Yeah,
true.
You're just ripping off their childhood from them and then making them, like, be with foster parents and like, or being in institutions and stuff, something that we will touch on later on, but everything is connected. So we need to find a fine line that, you know, stops us. Let's talk about one thing that we touched on earlier on lightly. It's confusion. So confusion, like meaning to say, like when parents call for a divorce, obviously it's not like over a family dinner and then the child also gets to know it the same time the mother or the father got to know it that there's going to be a divorce. Nobody has to know it the same time apart from both parties, right? So a child that suddenly doesn't see the father around or suddenly wakes up to find the father's things from the house is missing, like he has moved out literally. Okay, I'm only saying the father moved out because it's 80% of the time it's the men that move out the house where there is children. Okay, most of the time. I'm only giving you like the 80% scenario case. 20% of the time the wife leaves lah. But if she has children, I don't think she will just leave the house like that. So let's just put this scenario as the father leaves the house. Child wakes up to see the father's not at home. Child wakes up to see that the father is not coming around at home too often. He doesn't come back home at all. It sparks a question. Why isn't daddy at home? So that is a confusion. And do you think that it should be spoken to the child that they are going to go through a divorce before the father leaves the house, or it should be spoken after all these things they start noticing, like, oh, the father's not coming back home early, something is wrong, they start asking questions? So do we wait till the child starts asking questions, or do we get to the child before all these questions start coming up?
Okay, so if you ask me, it's better to wait when the child comes up with the questions. Because if you're going to explain this beforehand, before everything happens, the child's not going to understand. The child's going to think, then why? Why is this happening?
But both of it is going to cause confusion to the child, before or after.
Yeah, I mean, before or after, yes, it'll cause a major confusion, especially if the child is young and does not understand the concept of a divorce. Mm. So that confusion is going to happen. But then if you ask me which is better, do I explain to my child before the divorce happened, before the other party moves out from the house, or after, when the child actually notices it and then starts asking questions, I would say do it after. Let the child see what's happening around them, and when they have the questions in their mind, then you answer them, you address them. Because if you're going to tell all this to a child who does not see what's happening, who does not understand, like I said, do not understand the meaning, the concept of a divorce, then explaining to them, it's not going to make any sense to them because they don't understand what's happening. Whereas when it happens and then they see it from their own eyes and they notice that, you know, why is my other parent not around much more? Why am I always being... Simple, why am I always being thrown to my grandparents' house or my auntie, uncle's house? What's happening? Those kind of things. When they start noticing it, that's, I feel that that's the best time to explain to them exactly what's happening.
Okay.
But in a way, I would say it's a relief to some kids who actually see that their parents are separating, especially the younger ones. Why I say this is because normally, I wouldn't say majority of the time, but normally what happens is before the decision to take a divorce takes place, the atmosphere in the house is normally very, it's actually quite bad.
It's already awkward
you always see a
enough.
Lot of, yeah, you always see a lot of shouting, screaming, verbal, physical abuse happening. And I would say this would create some relief for the child once the parents go their separate ways. So that they don't see the other parent getting hurt anymore. They don't see the ugly side of the other parent who's, you know, doing all these things.
But if the cause of the whole divorce is because of domestic violence, then it's something that the child is going to see. It's something that the child is definitely going to get mentally affected by on a long term. It can affect the child's behavior when the child gets married. You know, it's a very long-term damage. So, in such cases, I think it would be a relief for a child. But in cases where it involves a third party, the third party is not even seen, you know, in the house. So
most of
the times, but we can always catch them in the house with the other party. You know, there are different situations.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like if the child knows the third party, it's going to get even more complicated. Then the hate will start building up because they'll be like, oh, we were a functional family, and then one person had to go and recruit this third party into the family, and then wow, boom down. Now this is bad. So the child will end up hurting that person because for them it's like, I've seen it for myself. I know who is at fault in this divorce, and then they automatically will start hating this person. Okay?
All right.
But
true,
then there are also children who take the side of the cheater, because the cheater is more fun than the other person who's not cheating. You know, maybe the other person who's not cheating is like, I'm a textbook parent. You know, I go by the rules. I'm super military upbringing. And then the other one is like, hey, listen, I can't deal with your other parent, and that's why I cheated. So if you want a good life, come with me. You know, we don't know. There's so many things that children can end up taking sides. Or they were actually expecting a divorce, and they already know whose side they want to be on. But if it's a complicated thing, I can say. Very, very complicated.
Yeah, it is definitely a complicated.
Very complicated.
It's very definitely complicated. And it's also, like what we're actually touching on, confusing.
Very.
Especially for the younger ones. I'm not talking about the preteens and the teenagers because more or less they know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They see it for their own eyes. They actually witness the arguments between their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point of time, when it reaches to that stage where you have teenagers at home and you're doing all this, and then you decide to have go for a divorce, your kids ultimately know at that point of time, this is the reason why mommy and daddy are getting a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, some of them would, even though they would feel down in a certain way, you know, thinking that, you know, at that point of time, once again, a personal point of view, at that point of time, no matter how much you are relieved that, you know, you're no longer going to witness physical and verbal violence in the house, you would start thinking about the times where you all enjoyed yourself as a family. And that's what they miss. But it's easier for them to comprehend what's happening. It's easier for them to understand why they're taking the decision. And it, in a sort of way, it also provides them with a relief that they don't have to witness all this in the house anymore.
Like we said, it all boils down to the cause of the divorce. If there was a case of abuse, domestic violence, then it will definitely be a relief for the children who are hiding under the table. It would definitely be a relief for them. But
it's a relief.
If it's the cause of the divorce is something that is very obvious to the child who made the mistake, where it's another story.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned before, preteens and teenagers, I'm sure they understand the term of cheating. Maybe not the younger ones. The younger ones can be easily manipulated by saying, no, this is just mommy or daddy's new friend. And then they would actually believe that pattern. Whereas a teenager is not that stupid.
Yeah, I mean, teenagers clearly know what is a divorce, what is... I mean, even if it didn't happen to them, it's... Divorce is as common as getting married these days, okay? It's not something that is taboo. It's not taboo like back in the days where our parents, when they were to get divorced, would be like, wow, you're jinxed. You're outcasted, you know? But in this time in India, it's like there are much more divorces happening, okay? Yeah, so it's like out of 10, there might be possibly two that's going through some kind of divorce in their own households. Or they might have every person would definitely know at least one person who is either separated or going through a divorce or divorced or something like that. It's a very normal thing. Right?
Yeah.
So for a teenager to go through divorce in their own family, it can work two ways, okay? I was a teenager once. It can go two ways. It can be either, wow, this is green light. I can go haywire and just blame it all on the divorce. Another one really honestly gets affected because they have been living their entire childhood, you know, and now they transition into their teenage lives and all that. They have been living with their parents for quite some time. They have established proper relationship with either one of the parents or both the parents. So for them, a divorce is like they feel they are also divorcing one of the parents. So it's like two against one kind of thing. So it's sad.
Okay, let me ask you. Okay, the thing is that this is another sad, but especially as a teenager who had her parents divorced. At a point of time, I knew how annoying it was when people said that I'm using the divorce as an excuse to behave a certain way. Okay, I practically grew up with my father's side of the family. My father's mother, my paternal grandmother was the one who took care of me. She practically raised me. She took care of me. I was closer with my father. My father was the disciplinarian in the house, no doubt about it. But the thing is that I was closer with my father since then. And when my father got removed from the picture, the thing that hit me was at a point of time, to be honest, even though my mom's family members surrounded me at the point of time, I didn't really feel that love from them. They were there. They were physically there. But then I didn't feel that kind of support from them because maybe I was not very used to getting that kind of support from them. And at that point of time, I yearned for my father's approval and, you know, his presence more. So I started reacting a certain way. At that point of time, I decided to blank out my whole family and, you know, rely on friends.
I mean, that's a thing that's definitely going to happen. But what I'm trying to say is that some children who are already on the track of becoming a rebel and have a track record of having bad behavior, even when the family was together, the divorce is probably going to kick it in a whole different level when you're talking about behavioral issues, okay? It's going to become even worse because parents are going to be so involved in their divorce proceedings that they tend to forget that they still have their parental duties.
No, being involved in the divorce proceeding is one thing. When the divorce is finally over, even after that, for a teenager or for a preteen to actually settle down and, you know, think that, okay, I don't have the other parent with me. That's when, especially like what you mentioned, those who are already showing signs that they're going to go in a different direction. These kids, normally what happens is that when divorce happens, again, speaking from a personal point of view, what happens is that subconsciously they use this as a reason to actually behave in a different way. And they stopped seeking, and when they were at a point of seeking approval from their parents, when divorce happens, when, you know, they get pulled into a single family, they actually, what happens is that they start seeking approval from friends. Because they feel their friends understand them better.
I mean, if their friends have the same experience, like their parents are going through a divorce, then they will just become very connected to each other because they feel that they both have each other's back. They can help themselves up, you know, and yeah, they find, I mean, they tend to console each other, which is understandable. But one of the things that I wanted to talk to you also was about behavior in school. Now, children go through something at home and clearly they cannot talk to anyone at home about it. Okay? They will tend to talk to their friends. First people they actually go to is the friend. Okay? And we as parents just hope that our children are always mixing around with the right company. But we are also teenagers. We were also teenagers once. Come on. We all had our fair share with bad company. But to be honest with you, that's how we grow. If we don't know the bad, then all we know is good, then we don't know how to survive when bad happens to us, right? So so we get exposed to different kind of people, and sometimes our children also get exposed to different kinds of friends. It's so possible that a child will end up being with bad company most of the time compared to, you know, sticking with the right company, coming back home on time. Sometimes they think that mixing around with the bad company, then they can just avoid coming back home on time because they get to hang out, you know, after school and stuff like that, and they don't want to come back home because they want to get away from all the nonsense that's happening at home, the shouting, the whatever, and they start staying out late after school, loitering around with school uniform in the shopping malls, fast food outlets and stuff like that. Things that we have done before, lah.
I mean, to be honest, sometimes it's just not going back to the shouting and all that. Sometimes it's just not going back to what you were used to. Like, before the divorce happens, you are going back to your own home where, you know, and the end of the day, mom and dad are going to be there and everything happens. And when divorce happens, you don't get those things anymore. You're either settled down with your parent who's holding your custody, or somehow you're bunked into another relative's house.
Another reason why children actually act out during a divorce is because they stop getting the attention they're supposed to get. Because parents are like so interested in, I mean, not so interested, they have to pay attention to the court proceedings. They need to come up with affidavits, they need to find the money to fund the divorce. There's so many things that actually goes through with them. And somehow they expect their children to be online. Hey, do your homework. Go to school on time, get up and sort your uniforms out yourself because mommy or daddy has got so many things to do. So because you're old enough, which they think teenagers are old enough, which I think teenagers aren't actually old enough, they actually tend to not have a watchful eye over the teenager and expect a teenager to do things on their own. So because these teenagers do not get that kind of attention like they used to before the divorce started, they tend to act out. They tend to do things that attract attention on them, some of them. Okay, I'm not saying this applies to every kid, but there are some kids who have handled the divorce extremely well because it's like they continue performing academically, you know, they continue going for CCAs, they actually take an effort to go and talk to the school counselor themselves. Like, I have a problem. Things are not going well at home. I want to talk to a teacher. You know, they themselves actually are mature and sensible. But there are some teenagers who are not as mature as they think they are and are sensible enough. They make bad decisions during bad times.
Okay. You talk about having the freedom and all that. I ask, there's also one more issue that causes kids to behave. Since we're talking about teenagers now, teenagers to behave a different way. One other reason would actually be the fact that they don't have that same kind of support. And then when divorce happens, the current parent who's holding the custody places additional responsibilities and additional expectation on these kids. saying that, okay, you know, now mommy or daddy is divorced, so you need to make sure that you behave a certain way, do certain things, perform like this in school, so that, you know, people don't come back to me and say that, oh, just because you're divorced, that's why your kids turn out like that. And they put that kind of expectation
that
on
is
kids.
Already quite pressurizing for the child.
Yeah, correct. So, you know, it's like to if you're using your child to shield yourself from society, to make sure that, you know, people don't point finger at you and say, oh, it's because you're divorced, that's why your kids turn out this way. So the additional pressure is put on these kids, like saying that, okay, you need to make sure that you perform well in school. You need to make sure that, you know, you behave a certain way. And then people won't question me on saying, what type of kids did you raise? Or the other party, very simple fact, the other party won't come back to me and say, is this how you raised the kid? Is this why you fought for the custody and all that? So that pressure put placed on any child, especially teenagers, the time where you are going through things in life where you're supposed to start figuring out shit that happens in your life. Imagine these additional responsibilities, additional expectations are placed on you. There will, I mean, sir, maybe out of 100%, maybe 20% might be able to keep up to the expectations, but I can tell you 80% of them cracks down at this point of time.
True.
Because the responsibilities and expectations placed on them might not be the reason why, might be the main reason why they're so unhappy in the first place. And you know what happens is that just to please the parent who's taking care of them, they try to force all this into them. And they know that it's not working out, but it's not making them happy. And in the end of the day, they do it because I want mommy or daddy to be happy. I want mommy and daddy to be proud of me, not because they want it for themselves. Yeah. So this is another thing that children in divorce goes through, is the expectations placed on them after the divorce. Not going through divorce, but after the divorce happens.
Okay, let's talk about children in care. When I say children in care, we are referring to children who are removed from their homes and made to stay with their relatives or homes, you know, like children homes that government, I mean, some are government aided, some are not, I guess, I'm guessing. But some children are placed in homes by the court.
Foster homes.
Yes, foster homes, yeah. Or even foster parents. Or like, you know, before it even gets to that, some parents actually take their children and put them in with their relatives so that, you know, the house can be cleared, the house needs to be sold temporarily, let's just go and stay with this parent, you know, this relative, that relative. So we're talking about children who are actually not going to be raised in their home because of this divorce. Now, let's talk first things first about children who get sent to the relatives' homes. It can be the father, it can be the mother, whoever it is. Whoever who made the decision to send the child to the relative's home, but sending the child to a relative's home is already sad because, like I said, you're removing them out from the family unit and putting them with a relative. It's fun and all colorful and everything the first few days because, you know, you have cousins and all that kind of stuff. But in the end of the day, it will hit the child. And the question will start rising, like, how long is this going to be for? And they don't have their own personal family time together. I mean, that is the end of it. They're never going to see both parents at the same time in the same space. They're always going to have to see one parent separately and everything. It's never going to be a family unit ever again. So that itself...
That's very, very true.
Yeah, and...
I can give you an example. Once again, pointing back to my family life. When my mom and dad got divorced, they had to sell the family home, so we moved into my maternal grandfather's home in where my aunt and uncle shared the unit. I mean, my maternal grandfather is no longer around. So my aunt and uncle are the owners, current owners of the unit. So we shifted in with them. And mind you, I didn't have any cousins there because both of them were single. So it was just basically us. And you know, the first few weeks actually, it was actually fun down there. You know, because the uncle that we were staying with, he was super cool, he was super nice. And you know, it was just a new environment, you know, getting away from that house where it reminds you of so many things. Moving into a new environment that always gave you good memories, good reminders, like, you know, family gatherings and all that. That was a place of good, you know, good memories. So when you move house, initially the first few weeks, it was very nice. And then what started happening is that, well, to be honest, I started acting up. I started acting up. I started my behavior right now, 32 years old. I'm telling you, my behavior changed back then. Last time, I couldn't admit it. I couldn't agree with it. But my behavior changed back then. And then, at that point of time, I mean, heads off to my uncle. My uncle was really a friend back then. I didn't appreciate it. I didn't really thank him. I haven't really thanked him for it. But he was more of a friend. He was a person who actually sat down to me. He tried offering me different outlets to release that kind of anger. Like, you know, he would ask me to go cycling. He had a bicycle. He asked me to go cycling. You know, he asked me to play badminton, some kind of sports to take my mind and energy off this. But what happened at that point of time, and I don't mind if they're going to listen to this, but what happened is that my aunt started using words against me. And this is what I fear for a lot of kids who actually move in with their relative. And it's bound to happen one way or another when verbal abuse starts happening. And like I mentioned before, earlier, that, you know, you start getting compared with the parent who is not with you. So in my case, I started getting, because of my behavior issues, I started getting compared a lot to my dad. And hey, I don't really mind. If you think like everybody knows that I look exactly like my dad. If you think I behave like my dad, I'm fine with that. But that was me. I was able to channel my anger and my energy that way. But I do really care and think about kids who actually can't accept that. That physical, I'm talking about verbal abuse, that mental abuse, but let's talk about kids who actually go through physical abuse with their relatives as well when they move into relatives' house.
Some of the relatives can actually, you know, take in the child. I mean, you don't know what is the arrangement between the parent and the relatives. Okay, the parents may have said, "Oh, this is just a temporary thing. I will find a place for the child after the house is being sorted." But you know, divorce actually tracks. I mean, the children, their house, there's bank accounts and all these other assets involved is going to drag, okay? Especially if it's a contested divorce, it is going to drag. So some relatives can be okay, because she is related to me, I'll take in her child for the time being. But sometimes these things can drag on, and the child may end up staying longer than usual, and that could take a toll on the relatives, because it's like, hey, I've got another mouth to feed now, your child. And I already have my own household issues, and they might start taking their anger out on the child. That could also result to another domestic violence in their house, or ill treatment of the child. Even like shouting and throwing anger around and all that. That could be bad, and it may also result the child from running away from the house.
Oh yes.
So running away from the house is because they know that, okay, parents are screwed up, and now we have this relative who is making it seem like I choose to stay with her when actually I was placed there by my parents who couldn't take care of me. So you know what? Since both of you can't take care of me, I'll take care of myself. And they could run away because of that, because they feel that there's such a burden and they want to run away, and they feel like I'm better off staying out with my friends or stuff like that. And let's just be honest, nobody's friends, parents is going to take them in because they are keeping a runaway child. Let's just be honest. I know the child is in going through depression or going through the divorce and everything. It's 1-2 days, I think any parent would be okay with it. But they will want to ask the first few questions they ask all the time. Does your mom and dad know where you are now? Yeah, and then you're just going to lie your way out and say, yeah, they know and all that. And then you buy time and then stay there for 2 days, and then after that you go and hop and stay in another friend's house, or you just don't come out and, you know, don't come back home, and you become a missing person. And at that age, at that age, I'm guessing they don't even go to school.
Yeah.
So their education is also affected. So these small things are going to affect them big time in school. So if you're going to keep them in, if you're going to keep your children under the care of relatives, you have to understand that it cannot be a permanent solution. And this solution is just like grace period. You know, it's, there's going to be some kind of cutoff. You have to sort your child's residence. It's either they stay with you or they don't.
Yeah.
In the event they cannot stay with you, letting them stay with the relatives, you have to come in, pop in once in a while, or contribute, you know, like pay them a certain amount of fee for them to accommodate your child. You can't just expect them to like look after your child, you know, and like, you know, that's not right. Another one more thing.
No, but to be honest, even in that scenario whereby the parent is actually, you know, financially contributing and, you know, popping in once in a while, we will do see abuse happening when the parent is in there.
Yeah, obviously, because we don't know, because maybe this parent is strict. I mean, this relative is strict, that the parent feel like, I'm going to put my child in this strict home with this strict relative because I know this relative will check on my child's school, homework and stuff like that. And I can't do it. But you're putting your child with another strict relative. Okay, no matter what, it's not their child. No matter what. Okay, they are just going to look at the child as you are a child and you are a time being responsibility for me, and your parent left you with me because I am strict. So I'm going to be strict with you.
And there is one thing that I want to let people who are listening in, who's going through the situation at this point of time, if your child voices out to you that, you know, they don't feel comfortable in their home anymore, or if you notice certain behavioral changes in your child when you move into a relative home or when you move your child into a relative's home, my advice is to actually get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Because in my case, I stayed there for, I think, 3 years, if I'm not wrong. And then by the time my mom got her own house and we moved into our own home and all that, the relationship between me and my mother was gone at the point of time already. There was the hatred there already. So no matter what she did after that, it was never going to change. Yeah, because she allowed this to happen. Because it was her sibling, she allowed this for this to happen. And she chose to prioritize her siblings over me. So the hatred was there already. So for those who are actually going through this right now and who has placed their child or actually living in with a relative, you need to understand that even though that they're providing you the shelter, you need to understand what your child is going through at the same time.
And if a child were to say that, you know, they don't feel safe, things are happening, you know, the fact that they don't feel safe, I think it's high time you remove the child from such an environment.
Yeah, true. Whether it's safe, don't feel comfortable, feel very victimized in the home, remove them. Yeah. Remove yourself out.
Okay. Now, for those parents who actually don't have relatives, maybe they don't have relatives, or maybe the relatives don't want to take the child in, they have to resort to the court to get the child placed in a home. Most of the time, it's children's home. Not so fast. They wouldn't give a foster parent yet, I think, because they don't know whether it's a temporary solution or not. But most of the time, the child would be sent to a children's home. Now, what do you think about that? What do you think about children being sent to homes because their parents divorced?
I think, first thing we have to note is that if a child is being sent to a children's home, not only are there no relatives to take care of them, it must have meant that both of the parents have the incapability of taking care of them, meaning one might be in prison, the other one might be terminally ill. So if that's the case, if you ask me, depending on the age, it's really inadvisable to actually send them to a children's home, because like I said, kids going into children's home can mean many things. Some of them, both of their parents might have, passed on. Some of them, both their parents might have been incarcerated. Some of them, are sent to children's home for behavioral issues and all that. So you are sending your child into this place where there are a mix of these children. And I can tell you, 80 to 90% of the time, a child doesn't come out right from there. 80 to 90%. A child doesn't come out right from
there. Short story. My parents are divorced, right? And I couldn't stay with my... I mean, I was staying temporarily with a relative. But then I think my dad was quick to notice that I was kind of falling back academically. So he immediately removed me from the relative's house. And mind you, I wasn't staying in his relative's house. I was staying in my mother's relative's house, but my father put me there. So I don't know how that worked for my mom and that relative. But so after he took me out of there, through court, or was it through court? No, it was through a children's home that he actually placed me in the children's home for 6 months under voluntary admission. Okay. So that means I wasn't sent in by court or anything. I just went in by voluntary admission. Now, the good thing about voluntary admission is that it's volunteering. You volunteer to get in yourself. So there is no fixed date for you to come out of there. You can remove your child from there anytime. So what happened was that his whole idea was that once the divorce is over and everything, and then he will just take me out of there and then we can go and live together. That's what my dad's point was. And like what you said, because I was in a children's home, I had been exposed to children who were under a child protection order. I was exposed to children who are beyond parental control. I was exposed to children who were under juvenile arrest case. Okay. And also children who didn't have anywhere to go after 17. You don't have your parents, like you said, like parents are both in prison or something like that, So I was exposed to a lot of children. Now, the good thing, there are pros and cons to living in a children's home. The good thing was that there was discipline. Okay, whether you like it or not, regardless of the age, there was discipline. The bad thing is that it's not coming from your family. It's coming from authority figures. And your parents are not there. And this is the time you actually need that kind of childhood. You need that teenagehood where you have a family unit. And there are not many people who are blessed with that. So I was one of those where my entire secondary school life was just being brought up in institutions. So I didn't get to have the normal teenage life and all that. Now, because of that 4 years, right, my parents don't have much of a say after that when it comes to decision-making when it came to my life, because I was like 4 years of my life, you both have been absent. So we don't exactly have parent and child relationship. But all of that obviously changed after I got married and I welcomed the child into the family. Then all this grandmother, grandfather and all this kind of relationships started coming into the picture. But the whole, like, I decide what's best for you, that shit stopped at primary six. After that, it was more on, like, MCYS. Back then, it was known as MCYS, I think, yeah. And them making decisions for us, And yeah, so that was how it all went. Now I need to cut ourselves very short because it's almost an hour. And I love this topic, children in care, because I have my personal experiences in it. And it's something that we should talk about because there are quite a number of children in hostels today.
Yeah.
And a lot of them come from divorced families and all that. So we will talk about it in the next segment, which will be part three of divorce. So I hope we can end the divorce segment in the part three itself. So catch us next week, Friday, where we will upload part three and we will continue the subject on children in care. So we'll see you next week, Friday. For now, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.